Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hello, everybody. Great to be with the best listening audience in the world. Have thoroughly and completely enjoyed my time as part of the WKOK Sunbury Broadcasting family. You know, every announcer in the conference has to be based somewhere along the line, and I ended up ending with the best situation of any of them. And it's great to be with all of you, and love to hear from you at 1-800-795-9565. One quick note before we move on here. Sunbury Fire Company, and I mentioned this a couple times, but maybe not. I'm trying to pick different spots in the show to mention this. Sunbury Fire Company is having its Mustang raffle coming up. For whatever reason, they are either behind, either because of the cost of the car or so forth. Volunteer fire companies are the greatest bargain any community can have. And they are one of the greatest sources of pride that any community can have. So whatever you can do to help out the Sunbury Fire Company, I want to make sure you know that I am behind them 100%, and hopefully you will jump on board. Buy a ticket. Help them out, because you're not going to find bigger difference makers than your local fire company, and in this case, the Sunbury Fire Company. Our number, 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. Questions I've been bringing up. One is 20th year of the Big Ten for football for Penn State. 20th season. So, do you like Penn State being in the Big Ten? Yes or no? That's our poll question on SteveJonesShow.com. And we talked a lot about the Big East yesterday. And I gave you really a historical rundown of where we are and how we got here. And why the Big East has been a mess. Now, the Big Ten is, of course, organized. And I also want to say this about the Big Ten has come out in favor of the 4-team proposal for the playoff. That's important, because this is not going to happen unless the Big Ten has its support behind it. But they are not going to be in favor of the home field. The Big Ten is going to back a proposal that utilizes the bowl system to have the semifinal and then the final. In the end, and they say, in the end, I agree with it. In the end, I do agree with it. Yes, it would have been incredibly intriguing to have a semifinal game between an Auburn and a Penn State at Beaver Stadium. Of course it would. And the snow swirling around and so forth. And I heard Colin Cowherd in one of his ridiculous rants this morning comparing playing home playoff games in the snow to buying a $4 watch versus a $400 watch, because snow cheapens the product. It's like, cut me a break.
Oh, yeah, that's why everybody loves when the snow starts to fly at a football game. Yeah, I know. I don't agree with that.
I mean, he's so far off base on that. I mean, talk about having no pulse.
Here's a guy that's probably never sat out in a football game in the last 20 years without it being in a box somewhere.
Well, look, I mean, his problem is Kevin Durant's not out there. Our number is 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. One of the things that makes football great are the elements. Okay? I don't care if it's a beautiful sunny day. What about the wind? Overcast day. Maybe a little rain. Ball gets wet. Snow. You can have any kind of issue. Guess what? He was talking about, you know, great quarterback being forced to play in the snow. Well, guess what? What if you're a great quarterback and they play the playoff game in the South and it's a driving rainstorm?
What playoff game in the NFL is more memorable than the Fog Bowl, than the Ice Bowl, than the snow playoff game between Oakland and New England? I mean, those are the ones that we remember.
Of course, they are memorable moments. And they were all big games, and they're all very well-played games in spite of the conditions. Patriots-Raiders game was actually played at a very high level. Adam Vinatieri kicking those two field goals in those conditions, remarkable. The Ice Bowl game, Bart Starr leading them down the field, dumping the ball off to Chuck Mersine, then finally himself scoring in the quarterback sneak. The 21-17 game, that was actually a very well-played game. Bears and Eagles Fog Bowl game. I was actually in Chicago that day. I was traveling back from a basketball tournament, had a layover in Chicago. And I was not held up in Chicago because of the fog, because at O'Hare, it was beautiful. And I remember taking off, we're flying over Soldier Field. There's this huge cloud. I was actually there that day, physically there that day, and I was at O'Hare. It was a beautiful day at O'Hare.
TV cameras couldn't even follow the ball that day.
Couldn't follow the ball, couldn't do anything. It was phenomenal.
And then there's my personal favorite that anybody will remember, Miami, New England, the snowplow game.
Yeah, Arslan, let's get John Smith out there. Hey, why don't you run that snowplow over here? Thank you, man.
Oh, you won.
Work release from Walpole.
There were five people in the stadium for that game.
I know.
But that's a memorable game. And, you know, and I've been to games like that. Just this past year, Bucknell Lafayette was in the snowstorm. There was five inches of snow when we left Lewisburg. There was 10 inches of snow in Allentown at that point. You couldn't see the lines. And you know what? Not one of those guys you talked to after the game said it wasn't the most fun that they had playing football.
And I think it's fun for the fans. I think they love it. Look, you can't play every game in a dome. This is not a dome sport. It's not. Baseball's not a dome sport. It's not.
I'm okay with that if it rains.
No, it's not a dumb sport.
Because at least the game can continue then.
You know, and I know I get frustrated by the fact that, you know, I mean, in broadcasting State College Spikes baseball, the last 2 years have been phenomenal in terms of the weather. You know, it may have rained, but it may have rained during the day, but we're all set to go at night. And I hardly had any rain delays last year. I think there are only, I think I can think of two. And one of them was only 15 minutes. Rain delays are frustrating. But it's still an outdoor sport. I went to a game once in the Metrodome, Kevin. It's not a good game.
Well, again, if it's raining outside, I'm okay with the dome. If it's sunny and nice outside, or even if it's dry, it should be in open air. But here's the thing. I look at it from my own personal perspective. When you drove 2.5 hours to go to a game, you get to go to maybe one game all year. You drive 2.5 hours to get to the game. You look to see your favorite player, and it starts to rain. And then you drive 2.5 hours home and not have seen a pitch. It's very disheartening. That's why if you can figure out a way to play a game in the elements or play a game without the elements, it's okay to do to me. It's okay by me. But if it's a game that is not stopped by the elements, you play soccer in most elements, you play football in those kind of elements, then I don't see any reason to play it in a dome. Baseball is the exception for me because of the fact that they stop the game for the elements.
Well, they do stop it, but you know what? There are relatively few stoppages. There really are. Now, it's happened to me. I remember one time I had tickets to see the Red Sox play Texas. Rained out. Had tickets to see the Red Sox play the Brewers when the Brewers were in the American League. Rained out. And then the frustrating one for me is I had tickets in 2003 to see the Red Sox and the Pirates down at PNC Park. It was misting all night. I mean, you know, instead of calling the game right away or whatever, they made everybody wait in the park for 2.5 hours. And then they postponed the game. You're like, what the heck? Why did they make us wait here for 2.5 hours?
But they play a World Series game in 5-degree weather with a puddle at shortstop. There's a little inconsistency there, don't you think?
Right. But it also told me the state of the Pirates franchise at that point. I mean, things have changed since. It was 2003. And the reason they had set this one up, it was 100 years of the first World Series. 1903, Pirates, Red Sox. I had tickets on the third base line that year. No, I'm just kidding. And here everybody's waiting. All the Red Sox players come out. All of them. Ortiz, Manny Ramirez, Nomar Garciaparra, right? Curt Schilling. Or not Curt Schilling, wasn't one of them in 2003. Pedro Martinez. They all come out of the dugout. Guess what they did, Kevin?
Signed autographs?
They signed autographs for everybody.
Right? That doesn't happen often.
Just kept signing. I looked in the Pirate dugout. There was one guy sitting there with a jacket on looking out at the field. There were no Pirates out signing autographs.
Did you even know his name?
Nope.
That's probably why. That's probably why he was sitting there. He went out to sign autographs and nobody knew he was there.
But every member of the Red Sox came out and signed autographs. As a franchise, had not been to Pittsburgh in 100 years. And they knew the predicament. They're signing. Right? They got it. The group that needed to be signing was sitting in the dugout with one guy. Everybody else is in the clubhouse. Remarkable. Now, things have changed since. The Pirate franchise has changed dramatically under the leadership of Frank Coonley. And they're going to be fine. Problem is, it's going to take a long time for them to get there. Right now, the Phillies are a better offensive team than the Pirates. The Phillies have marquee starting pitching, but the Pirates' starting pitchers are almost pitch for pitch with the Philly starters, and the Philly starters have been outstanding, but the Pirates have been outstanding at starting pitching as well. Pirates have a better bullpen. They have better bullpen.
Well, it's not like the Philly set the bar real high.
But I'm telling you right now, if the Phillies had the Pirates' bullpen, they'd be in first place right now.
And this Vance Worley thing makes it worse because now you got to take one guy who was in the bullpen and bring him to a starting position where he was at that point.
Kyle Kendrick.
Right.
He starts tonight against Matt Garza.
And at least it's the Cubs.
Look, the Phillies have enough offense. Even without Chase Utley, they have enough offense if they can somehow get something out of the bullpen. Because they have the starting pitchers. I mean, Cliff Lee's ERA can't be any better for a guy who hasn't won a game.
I think it's five no decisions now.
Right. Cole Hamels has been great. Contract year should be great. Okay. Roy Halladay is Roy Halladay. There's a major league franchise that wouldn't want to have Roy Halladay. And Vance Worley has been outstanding. I mean, Worley has been at times the best guy on the staff at times.
Just the elbow thing worries me. And if it was anything but an elbow, and it's been going on for a little while now.
The fact that it's retroactive.
Yes.
Should make you feel better.
You think?
Sure it does. That means they want him back faster.
Well, but you know what? Philadelphia has, and Ruben Amaro Jr. has an uncanny knack of downplaying everything for about 13 days, and then all of a sudden he goes on the 60-day DL, and it's surgery, and it's the end of the season, and it's happened many, many times over the last several years. They play the media game very, very well so that fans don't get don't get too anxious.
But it's retroactive.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. I'm just saying that the Phillies do this a lot, though, and then say it's just a little irritation, and all of a sudden it becomes surgery, and all of a sudden it becomes more than that, and you know everything, it kind of builds from there. So as someone who's watched a lot of Phillies games over the last several years and the organization, I'm not overly happy even that it's retroactive, but I get what you're saying.
Yesterday on Facebook, Sean Carey made a comment on my comment.
I know where you're going with this.
I referred to you on the air And he seemed to concur. Captain Bitter.
Captain Bitter.
We'll come back with more talk with the Prince of the Bitter Herb. Kevin Herr in a moment. As we continue, Steve Jones Show, Herr in tow, WKOK. Mr. Bitter,
B-I-T-T-E-R.
That's you.
Yeah, it's only, he just tweaked his ankle. He'll be fine. Oh, wait, it's an Achilles. He'll be out for the rest of life.
You are so cynical.
Well, it's just time and time again. It's been a bad, bad baseball year for Phillies fans. It's been tough to deal with. I mean, yeah, the hope of Howard coming back, and then, well, Howard's going to be delayed. He had another setback. And then Utley's coming back, but wait a minute, he's not really ready yet. He's going to take some he's not going to take infield right now, but he's going to sit in the dugout and be there for support. And then you have pitchers going on the DL, pitchers coming off the DL. The bullpen is a mess. There's not been a whole lot. The only thing that's positive right now, if you're a Phillies fan, is you're only five games out of first place.
Right. Can I make a quick point about Ryan Howard?
Sure.
Last October, when Ryan Howard got hurt, I frankly thought he'd be out for the entire 2012 season. He ruptured his Achilles. You don't, quote, bounce back from that baby. The fact that they might get him back in June, to me, is the equivalent of making a deal and acquiring somebody from another team to play for you the last 2-3 months of the year. It's a bonus. Whatever they get out of him this year, I think it's a bonus. Now, the Utley thing is discouraging because you thought he was going to be there from day one, and suddenly there he is again, out of action. And not only that, nobody knows when he might come back.
Or if.
Right, exactly. But again, with Howard, anything that Ryan Howard gives the Phillies this year, to me, if I'm going back to my mindset in October when I watched him crumble to the turf against the St. Louis Cardinals, and I found out the next day it was a ruptured Achilles, my thought was they won't have him for a year. Especially a man of that size.
In all honesty, when he first did it, and this is going to sound bad, I really admit that, but in all honesty, when he first did it, I thought that he just went down because he was so upset that it was in a key situation again in the playoffs and it didn't come through. I honestly thought that's what it was.
C-A-P-T-A-I-N-B-I-T-T-E-R. Captain Bitter.
I'm not proud of that. I'm not proud of the fact that I thought that, but that's honestly what I thought. And actually, it kind of made me happy that if that was the case, because that would show that he was very upset with the fact that he didn't come through in the clutch like he wanted.
I understand. But that's not the reality of it. And again, anything they were to get out of him this year, I've always considered to be a bonus. And he's not back yet, but he is going to play for them this year.
Yeah, Utley's a big concern right now because they had hoped that he would be back to this point, at least fielding grounders. Now, he does take some hitting, but he hasn't done any infield whatsoever. But he's still up with the club, which makes you wonder why.
I wonder why, too. That's a good question. I don't know why.
I mean, is he there because he's a good clubhouse guy and they need somebody like that right now?
Or is the training staff and the training regimen better at the club?
Right. That's what I'm hoping it is, that they can get a better look at him if he stays up.
Look, at some point he's going to have to, you know, rehab himself someplace, take a few at-bats somewhere. I mean, that's the point you got to look at. I mean, he's not at that stage yet, thus keep him with the big club. Keep him around the trainer that knows him, medical staff that knows him, go from there. No need to stick him right now in Clearwater. Have him just do whatever for no apparent reason until it comes time to get some ABs and go from there. But his return, I mean, you could throw a dart into a dartboard. That would be as good a guess as to when he's returning. Now, Ryan Howard, again, based on what I saw last October, Anything they get out of him this season, to me, is a bonus. Meanwhile, Kevin has 18 guys on the disabled list that are out for the year in his own mind. That way, when they come back, he can be pleasantly surprised. Our number, 1-800-795-9565. Do you like Penn State being in the Big Ten? 20th season of the Big Ten football coming up. I'd love your opinion. Sarah Bartlett in the news. Coming up next, our number, 1-800-795-9565 on The Steve Jones Show.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And a happy Wednesday to you. Tomorrow, Dana O'Neill from ESPN.com and Ron Cook of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Friday, Dick Girardi from the Preakness. Steve Jones, Kevin Herrin tow at 1-800-795-9565. Our poll question, and we're going to leave this up for a few days. Do you like Penn State being in the Big Ten? Yes or no? And I'd like to hear your reaction on the air at 1-800-795-9565. Love to hear your reaction. You know, do you like it? Do you like the way it's worked out? Whether it's football, basketball, wrestling, whatever it happens to be. And if you don't, where do you think they should go? Independent, ACC, Big East, I don't know. The Big Ten, by the way, coming out in favor of the four-team playoff proposal. That's significant. But the Big Ten has been behind it now for the last few months, but still officially saying it. And also, the Big Ten would prefer to see it work within the bowl system and not have home games for teams. In the end, I think that's just fine. So, bowls have been so good to college football, I think they should be utilized in a playoff system. I've always felt that from day one. Go ahead.
So where would you have the championship game in that case?
Well, you rotate it. You rotate it through. You have four major bowls, Fiesta, Rose, Orange, and Sugar Bowl. And you just kind of rotate every year as to which two end up with the semifinal, which one ends up with the title game. And you still keep everything else intact.
What about not eliminating the bowl? Let's say the Sugar Bowl is your national championship game. What about creating just a bowl game for the national championship and still leaving the Sugar Bowl as a Sugar Bowl?
Yeah, we already have that.
I know.
I think that ship has sailed. I think you need to have two of them be at the title, and I think you need to have one end up being the title game. Or two of them need to be the semifinal and win the title game. Fans love games with stakes. And this has been college football's failing. I mean, this bluster about the regular season and so forth, and our regular season's relevant and blah, 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 blah. I've heard forever the college basketball regular season isn't relevant. I've heard that forever. Look at this, 68 teams in the tournament, blah, 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 blah. Really? I've sat here at Penn State for 30 years doing basketball. This will be my 31st season coming up. And I can tell you every one of those regular season games are damn relevant. Every one of them. Because I've only done four NCAA tournaments in my career. Four. Now, is it a coast home for Duke, North Carolina? Sure. But what about everybody else fighting for it? I mean, Villanova's been great all these years. They weren't great this year. And they weren't in the NCAAs this year.
And if you're a mid-major, you better be almost perfect.
Exactly. One of the reasons that Virginia Commonwealth's making its move from the Colonial to the Atlantic 10 is usually the fourth-place team in the Atlantic 10 can make it. In the Colonial, the fourth-place team is never going to make it. So you can falter a bit. But in college football, you can talk about the relevance of the regular season. Is there really... Of course there is, but you have to keep yourself at a high level, high level, high level the entire time. There was one undefeated team in last year's regular season. That was LSU.
I'm not sure how I feel about this, so I'm going to pose this question to the listener as well as you. if you go with a, let's say, league champion to represent your league in a national championship football tournament, or, you know, just for discussion purposes, is that better than picking, using the computer charts to pick the top four, eight, or however many you pick?
This is, let's go with four.
Okay.
And this is how I feel about it. If there are four conference champions within the top six, they should get the nod. If it turns out that in the top six, based on computers and rankings and everything like that, that you don't, I think the pool has to come from four of those top six.
But here's the only argument I have with that. Let's say for this discussion that Penn State does not win the Big Ten, but is higher in the rankings, so they go to a national championship tournament. That makes winning the Big Ten not as big a deal. And I think you're looking at the same thing in college basketball. Winning your league doesn't really matter as much as winning the tournament when it comes to the end of the season. I think that's the only issue I would have with doing it that way.
That's not what I said.
Okay, then I misunderstood. Go ahead and explain it to me again.
Of the top six teams, if there are four conference champions in the top six.
Oh, okay. No matter where they are in the top six.
No matter where they are in the top six.
All right.
They should get the nod.
All right. I can agree with that then. Yeah, because otherwise it makes winning the league no big deal. I misunderstood, but I got you.
Right. But the pool has to be in those six teams. Pool has to be in those six teams. And this year, you wouldn't have had it. Would you have had it? Because, let's see, LSU, Alabama, Oklahoma State, Stanford. They're in the four. Arkansas was five. Oregon was six. Now, in that case, in the top six, you had three conference champions. Dun, dun, dun. So under my proposal, LSU would have made it. Oklahoma State would have made it. Oregon would have made it. The other one then would be selected by a committee between Stanford, Arkansas, and Alabama as to which one filled out the field. That's the only way, to me, a non-conference championship get in.
Yeah, because I think you have to make the conference championship worth something. And that's always been my argument with the way college basketball does their automatic bids. But, you know, bringing back to today's question on where you want Penn State to be, if not the Big Ten, where else, that makes that choice very, very interesting. Because if you go independent, you have one opportunity to win a national championship, and that's the hope that you're in the top four or five. And there's only three more. There's only three teams that are conference winners.
So it's Notre Dame, Army, Navy, and BYU.
Right now, yeah.
So what? That's their problem.
No, I know that. I know that. I'm just saying, I was tying it back
into
our question.
They have to be in the top six.
Right.
And they're not a conference champion.
But do you think with the support Notre Dame has nationwide, that would ever go through?
Kevin, they're not going to get there. They're not good enough.
That's a different issue.
Come on.
That's a different issue.
I mean, that ship sailed. And they know it. They're hanging on. One of the dumbest decisions Notre Dame made was in 1999. They should have gone to the Big Ten. Their academic people were aching for them to go. Their faculty senate voted yes. But, you know, they're still stealing Big East bids and for football bowl games. And
NBC. That was the other reason.
Yeah, but their ratings on NBC aren't that great.
They don't care. They just want the money.
Oh, yeah. No, Notre Dame's fine with that. I'm talking about NBC.
Right.
This NBC thing has not worked out the way they thought. They thought by getting Notre Dame, they'd have great TV ratings. They haven't. ABC beats them every week. The ship sailed. Okay? They change coaches every third, fourth year. They have no stability. They haven't had stability. Lou Holtz is the last stable part of that program. They haven't had stability in a long time at Notre Dame. And they really, you know, they didn't have, it was okay before Holtz. I mean, Jerry Faust was a stretch. But they haven't had a lot of stability there. And I think Brian Kelly's going to be there for a long time. I think he'll do a good job. And he has, you know, it's interesting. I saw Notre Dame get some players drafted on defense. He has his best players on offense. We all know that. He has his best athletes on offense. He didn't have a very athletic defense. Okay? But, you know, I'm sick of everybody over the years bending over backwards about the Notre Dame thing. They're not a factor. They haven't been a factor in 20 years. I mean, Penn State was aching to play them in the Fiesta Bowl back in 2005 because everybody knew they weren't that great. And Ohio State crushed them. That's why they put the Notre Dame rule in.
The Notre Dame rule.
Well, you know about the Notre Dame rule, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, the Notre Dame rule is as follows. If, when Notre Dame went to the Fiesta Bowl, and I want to say it was 2001? They played Oregon State. Oregon State, if you recall the game, they had Chad Johnson, and they had T.J. Hutsumanzada, all right? Oregon State crushed Notre Dame. And this is how you end up losing 9-10 bowl games in a row, is that you go in there and you get crushed. And so they get beaten. But they got $17 million for going to the game. Everybody looked around and said, hey, whoa, wait a minute. Why do they get $17 million? So they put the Notre Dame rule in, where if Notre Dame goes to a BCS game, known otherwise outside of South Bend as a pipe dream, they would get $4 million and be considered the second Big East team. That's the Notre Dame rule. So in other words, every time you have two, for example, last year the Big Ten had two BCS teams. And for the most part, the Big Ten has had two. Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl, Michigan in the Sugar Bowl. So in terms of what the conference pool gives, because the Big Ten's an equal share conference, what Wisconsin brought to the pool was $17 million, and what Michigan brought to the pool was $4 million. So between the two of them, $21 million to be split among the 12 conference schools plus the conference office. That's the Notre Dame rule.
But with if they do the selection the way you were talking about here, which I would personally think that makes the most sense, it makes the choice of your conference more than just money now.
Okay, I'm confused on that.
Well, it makes your choice of conference a little more than just a money decision, as we were talking about yesterday. I mean, you might want to go to the Big East because you think you have a better chance of winning the Big East on a regular basis and a shot at the national championship.
You have to be in the top six.
Well, I understand that.
Okay,
but if you do well in your conference.
The Big East champion is not going to be in the top six. That's the caveat.
Ever?
Kevin, look at the list of schools.
I know. I know that.
Which Big East school is going to be in the top six?
Well, and that's my point.
There were three SEC schools in the top six last year. Three. And two Pac-12s. And a Big 12. There wasn't a Big 10 team in there. Top-rated Big 10 school last year was Wisconsin at 10. So the Big Ten would not have had a representative there. They wouldn't have had it.
I'm just thinking this out. If you're a powerhouse team, like, all right, for the sake of argument, let's say you're in the SEC, and you're one of those teams that's always competitive, but always seems to be two games short of everything because there's always two better teams. You might want to move to, say, a Big East, take a chance on making a little bit better non-league schedule, but winning the league and at least giving yourself a better shot. That's what I was looking. That's the way I was looking at it. But I understand what you're saying, because the teams you're playing are not that good, you're going to lose points in the overall scheme because of strength of schedule.
Okay. You know what I'm going to do?
Okay.
We're going to take a break. All right? And when we come back, I'm going to explain to you the reality of what you just said.
Okay.
And I'm going to do it in terms that everybody can understand.
So in other words, you're going to dumb it down to me, for me. I get it. That's all right.
We're going to use as many monosyllabic words as possible.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
We'll come back with that explanation in a moment.
Sunbury Motor Company, a tradition of trust since 1915. We have the largest selection of new and used Fords, Lincolns, Hyundais, and Kias anywhere. You want a new Ford? You got it. A 2012 Ford Fiesta four-door sedan, just $232 per month. And it gets 38 miles per gallon. And if you really want to save mileage money, come get a new 2012 Hyundai Veloster, three-door coupe with 40 miles per gallon on the highway for just $292 a month. Swing on over to Sunbury Motors Kia and try on a new 2012 Kia Forte four-door sedan for just $18,230. And when it comes to used cars, well, just head over to sunburymotors.com and search our huge selection of pre-owned vehicles, where you can use our black book and take the guesswork out of trading in your old car. We give you easy access to the most up-to-date internet car buying tools. There's a reason we're number one. So come check us out today at Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, located at 943 North 4th Street in the Auto Plaza, or Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, or go to sunburymotors.com.
Once again, Kevin Herr has asked a question. You may rephrase.
I may rephrase?
You can go ahead. You can ask the question, well, because you have come up what you perceive to be a very clever answer.
I do. I think this is, if you're a team that, you know, struggles a little bit in your conference, but you've been able to hang in there, move to a weaker conference so you could get that championship playoff berth by winning the conference and build up your strength of schedule by adding some non-conference games.
And where do you propose we go? What conference do you think opens that door?
Maybe the SEC. Oh, wait. What conference do you think opens the door
to your scenario?
Why not the Big East? Because they're struggling to find anybody that wants to stay.
Absolutely. Now, Kevin, let's explain to you in no uncertain terms why that will never happen.
Let me guess. You just put your feet up onto the desk now as you're going to explain this to me. All right, go ahead.
If you are in the Big Ten, for example, you have a 10-year, $1 billion deal with ABC and ESPN through 2016, a 25-year deal worth $2.8 billion with the Big Ten Network through 2032, a 6-year, $145 million deal with Fox for the Big Ten Championship game. Annually, you get $236 million. Okay? You know what the annual payout per school is in the Big Ten?
No.
$22 million.
That's a nice hunk of change.
Let's go to the Big 12. For example, in the Big 12, do you know what the annual payout is to the 10 Big 12 schools for television?
No.
$200 million. Average per school, $20 million. Now, it's not a complete payout to everybody, but it's pretty close. All right, they have a 13-year, $1.2 billion deal with Fox through 2025, 13-year, $1.4 billion deal with ABC ESPN through 2025. Pac-12, Larry Scott, Progressive Commissioner, phenomenal. He is the young Jim Delaney. 12-year, $2.7 billion deal with Fox, ABC, ESPN through 2024. They bring in $225 million. Also, there's a potential for even more than that. Annual payout per school, $20.2 million. Okay?
A lot of money.
SEC, 15-year, $2.25 billion deal, ESPN through 2024. 15-year, $825 million deal with CBS through 2024. They bring in $204 million per year, $205 million per year. average annual per school is $17.1 million. Okay. Now, you would like to take schools away and send them to the Big East because that's your way to get to the BCS championship game.
Right.
Let's outline this for you, sport.
Okay.
The Big East has a six-year, $200 million deal with ABC, ESPN, and CBS contributes $9 million into that. That runs through the end of next year. That brings in $40 million. The average payout per school, if you have football, is $3.18 million. If you don't have football, it's $1.56. So,
but they're renegotiating that contract. And by having a better school in there, they'll be able to get another opportunity. Here we go.
Repeating once again for the hearing impaired.
it's comprehension.
There is no way on the planet the Big East is getting a contract that rivals the Big Ten, the Big 12, the Pac-12, and the SEC. This is not going to happen. And the ACC deal I didn't even get to yet. The ACC deal is $240 million. It's going to pay out $17 million per school. They are so far behind, they think they're first. Not even close.
They're so far behind, they think they're first.
They bring in $3.18 million a school. Okay? In order to get to second place, they have to up the ante $14 million a school. Where do you find that money? I mean, the ticket oak is already taken.
And the money tree's already somewhere else, too.
Exactly,
yeah,
right. It's over in Bartlett's yard.
I understand the economics, and that's why I preface that, if you remember, with money aside, because I do understand the economics of it.
That's what it's all about.
And that's the whole point, isn't it?
I mean, you need the money, okay? We're celebrating 40 years of Title IX. You need the money to fund your athletic department, okay? Everyone can talk about big, bad football and big, bad men's basketball. Guess what? They allow you to have softball, field hockey, women's gymnastics, wrestling, everything else that goes with it. And it helps everybody.